Our guest today is singer-songwriter P.F. Sloan, an enigmatic figure in 60s rock and roll in Los Angeles. If L.A. rock had a label system similar to the movie's studio system, this transplanted New Yorker was a Dunhill man. Dunhill was the Mamas and Papas label that signed P.F. Sloan and consequently failed to promote his own albums while using him for studio sessions and for his songwriting. You hear today about the hits he wrote and how his deteriorating relationship with Dunhill led him to quit the music business for 30 years. His best-known song as a writer is Eve of Destruction, which was a hit in 1965 for Barry McGuire. The Cafe's Michaela Majune asked P.F. Sloan about the effect of that song when it was first released in 1965.
One of the positive things that came out of Eve of Destruction was the 27th Amendment, which was giving 18-year-olds the right to vote. When I wrote this song, I literally found myself testing each line thousands of times to see where the hole in the argument was, where who could penetrate the holes, who could exploit it, who could negate it. But one of the sharpest lines in the song is, if you're old enough to kill, then you really have the right to vote. I did some looking up on the internet and found that there was a senator from Kentucky in 1857 who proposed the very same thing on the floor of the Senate in 1857, just before the Civil War, saying that he felt that if you could bear arms, that you should vote. But then I did some further study and found that it comes from English law. They made armaments for people that were 21 years of age, and they made it to fit the male body at 21, and 18-year-olds were slender, so they couldn't wear the armor, so that's where the 21-year-old mentality came in. And it wasn't that you were mentally mature, it's that you were physically able to wear armor at 21 that they had made up.
Was that song taken up by the movement to get the 18-year-old vote?
Yes, independently of me, because I was already out of the music business. That was taken up independently, and that line was used in the preamble to the amendment, saying from the song, popular song of its day, if you're old enough to kill, but not for voting. So that was the spearhead for it, I think. So that's a positive thing that came out of it. Obviously, segregation has, in the original song, I talked about integration, and I had in my furthest reach into the future, I could have never foreseen that the word integration would no longer have any viability or meaning. It's segregation is back, and though lots of wonderful strides have been made, we're still experimenting with the idea of separate but equal, but under the table, gentleman's agreement equal. So, I mean, I was as an American, as a young American, I was touching upon these things that I wanted to put out to my youthful friends and for a dialogue and say, as a doctor says, you know, you've got this, you've got that, this needs repair, or you're dead. You know, basically the song was a prescription for my generation saying, we don't want to be here unless you're going to do these repairs. Then along comes the Vietnamese War, and a lot of people started running out of the country.
Well, let's hear the song. And are you going to do the original version or a rewritten version of it?
Well, the one on Sailover is really darn close. There's only a couple of added lines and one change lines. So in effect, I call it the original plus kind of thing. I don't know. It goes like this.
Lord, the Eastern world is exploding, as violence flaring, as bullets loading. They're old enough to kill, but not for voting. Say you don't believe in war, so what's that gun you're toting? Lord, even your Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, destruction. Well, I know you can understand what I'm trying to say. Can't you feel the fears I've been feeling today? If the button is pushed, there'll be no running away. There'll be no one to save, Lord, with the world in a grave. Hey, take a look around you, boy, and if it scares you, boy, come on, come on and tell me over and over and over again, my friend. Ah, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Yes, and my blood gets so mad, feels like coagulating. You know, I'm just sitting here, I've been contemplating. You know, they can't twist the truth, 'cause it knows no regulation. Like a handful of senators that can't pass legislation. When money corrupts the value of elections, and marches and laws cannot end segregation. When human respect is disintegrating, Lord, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend. Nah, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Yes, well, think of all the hate I hear coming from Red China. Then I'll take a look around to Selma, Alabama. Yeah, you can leave here for 4 days in space. When you return, it's the same old place. There's the pounding of the drums, there's the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't you dare leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbors, yeah, but don't forget to say grace and tell me over and over and over and over again, my friend. Nah, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Nah, you don't believe we're on of destruction.
P.F. Sloan on the World Cafe with his powerful song Eve of Destruction, and that was a number one hit in 1965 for Barry McGuire. You were signed to a record deal at age 12, is that correct?
Yes.
That's amazing. That's unusual. Wouldn't happen today. Well, it might. I mean, kids are, the stars are getting younger all the time, but that's pretty exceptional.
I had met Elvis Presley when I was 12 and a half.
How?
Well, my father bought me a guitar for, I had been playing on a broken one-string ukulele for about 6-7 months. He got tired of listening to me harmonize to one string. He went out and bought a guitar. Excuse me. And I got on a bus and I went up to a record store on Sunset Boulevard. And there were cops keeping all the girls out. And I had a guitar, so they thought I was okay to go in. And I went in and I go over to the instrument section. And Elvis was upstairs having his Martin fixed, and he came downstairs and he said to me, he said, "Oh, I bet you want to learn how to play this thing, oh, kid." And
yes, sir.
Yeah. And he comes over and sort of like a golf pro puts his arms around me and starts singing Love Me Tender and starts showing me how to play the chords. And well, hey, that was rocket fuel to my soul. Within about 6 months, I answered an audition for Aladdin Records that was put in a flyer in the mailbox, and I got on the bus, went down there, waited on line with about 250 really talented black cats and ladies that were waiting to get signed, but they didn't sign anybody. They signed me that day, and I was a has-been by 13. The record came out 12, 12 and a half, and I was a has-been on the comeback trail at 13 and a half.
Another distinction. So what, I mean, how much time did you spend with Elvis? You, of course, knew who he was. Didn't you find that just wild that Elvis Presley was singing to you and teaching you chords?
Well, I'll tell you, he was simply, until I met my spiritual teacher in India, he's literally the most loving human being I had ever encountered. I just saturated with love and light and information. He sort of like has a couch inside of his heart. He drinks you in, sits you down on the couch, and then tells you all about the world and people. And he says, it's all about love. It's all about love. And I was a very fortunate individual. I mean, I hadn't felt love like that from anyone since, anywhere. So remarkable divine love he had.
How much time did you spend with him?
Probably like 20, 25 minutes.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Early on, you got into surf music, and you wrote a lot of songs, some of which became hits for Jan and Dean and others.
Yeah.
So you were living in L.A., and I guess it was natural, and surf music was big at that time, so I guess it was natural to gravitate toward that, and you wrote a bunch of surf tunes.
The publishing company that I was working for happened to manage Jan and Dean. And I was in the office when Jan's backup group, the Matadors, who sang on Surf City, they were asking for more money, and they said, no, how about you, Phil? And so I became Jan's backup singer. And Dean didn't show up one day for some sessions, and I wound up singing falsetto on Little Old Lady from Pasadena. And And then for the next, like, three albums, I started doing all of Dean's parts. That was a lot of fun, to do.
Do you feel like you've led a charmed life in some ways?
Well, you know, that any charm has its reverse, you know, has its reverse sides. You know, I found myself suffering from a number of burnout diseases after 3-4 years. And it's taken a good 25 years to recover physically and mentally from hypoglycemia, which was undiagnosable in those days, and major catatonia and depression, which just leaves you motionless and energyless and... But it teaches you to pray. There's one thing that's for sure. I mean, you pray every minute of every day, you know, to see the light, you know, to get out of depression. And I think my prayers were answered after a good long time. And so I regained my health, and here I am.
Here you are, and it's great to have you here. P.F. Sloan on the World Cafe today. So you obviously were and are a very versatile songwriter. If you could, you know, write surfing songs and also write these songs that are so hard-hitting and so direct and deal with such big issues, like Eve of Destruction and like the song Sins of a Family, which I think the radio listening public might not have been ready for at that time, or at least the people who were in charge of radio didn't think they were.
Yeah.
Talk about that song a little bit, because it's pretty intense.
It's a true story about a family situation that was going on. I was about 13, 14 years old. My cousin, whenever we'd go to visit in Union, New Jersey, I just noticed that that my uncle was getting drunk, and my aunt wasn't dealing with my cousin's problems, and I realized that by 16 she had turned literally to prostitution to get her lunch money, And it became a power trip for her. And I tried bringing it up to my family to try and intervene, but nobody would accept that it was happening. And now this has been carried over to the next generation. I'm praying I'm not naive enough to think that a song can, you know, stop, you know, the this thing from happening. But there is some sort of syndrome about women marrying alcoholics and getting involved in the sex trade for money. And it was too risque for 1965, sort of like I Love Lucy, you know, having, they just didn't want to hear the words alcohol, prostitution, or any of the problems that I was looking at.
Well, certainly it's a song that's not too risque or too direct for these times, and yeah. You put it on your new album, so let's hear it.
Thanks.
She had a bad childhood when she was very young, and people had judged her badly. She had a schizophrenic mother whose mind was in the gutter, would have sold herself to the devil gladly. Oh, what a sad environment, a bug-ridden tenement. And when they couldn't pay the rent, it's cause her father was out getting liquor. Ah, the stone's been cast in blood, it's thicker than water. And the sins of a family fall on the daughter. That's right. She had been around more than any girl over 30. And the high IQs on the high school news calling you a product of poor heredity. It's a well-known fact, if you fall on your back, you can backtrack your failure with inspection. I mean, it's such few exceptions. The sins of the family fall on the daughter. All of us, heaven selects just a precious few, and it's gonna take a lot of inside strength to get Gabriel to make an angel out of me and you. You know you can't live a lie and then expect to die. You want your soul in paradise, you know you have to pay the price here like your water. And if blood is thicker than water, then the sins of the family fall on the daughter. That's right.
Sins of a Family, P.F. Sloan, here with us today on the World Cafe, a song from, what year did that come out?
1965.
Oh, yeah. Same year as Eve of Destruction.
Yeah.
And it got on the charts right here and in England.
Yes, it did, for about a week. And then the label pretty much pulled it back.
This song is also on the new P.F. Sloan album, Sail Over, with Lucinda Williams singing, and I understand she didn't actually want to record that with you.
She was being overworked that day. She's such a sweet soul, and she wants to give so much. And there was another producer that was working her before she gave us time. And she was pretty tired. She wanted to go home. But, you know, bless her heart, she did.
It adds a lot to the song.
She does. She adds a feminine credibility to it.
One of the other songs around the same time as Sins of a Family and Eve of Destruction was Secret Agent Man, which was a hit for Johnny Rivers. Great song. And I think it shows a lighter side of your songwriting than the other two songs.
Yeah, I think that's the pop kid in me that, you know, was listening to Chuck Berry, Little Richard, Elvis, that side of myself. Just loving pop music.
And your sense of humor comes through in that, too.
Hopefully, a little bit.
And there's a song on the new album where it comes through. It's a dark sense of humor, but it's called Violence.
Hmm. Can I play that for you?
Yeah.
Violence, oh, that's what I want to see. Violence on the big screen and TV. It's in all my favorite sports. It's in all the news reports. Is it just me, or is it we can't ever seem to get enough of violence in whatever form it takes? Violence and all the money that it makes. Like some strange, bizarre, extreme attraction. Movie explosions, car wrecks, satisfaction. Am I watching way too much? I'm wondering now, am I all right? Or is this some demonic delight? Psychologists and theologians can't agree. The war of the world is on a night. There's terrorists, hurricanes, horrific sights. It's everywhere, it's in everything but me. Violence and the art of make-believe. Laughing at the phony blood they bleed. Shooting pixel cops on plasma screens. Harmless fun, all with killer dreams. I mean, you know what I mean. You say it's always been this way, sir. The Bible, Shakespeare, Bhagavad Gita. Well, scholars and theologians may agree. But the war of the world is on again tonight. There's bloody battle scenes and gangland fights. It's everywhere, it's in everything but me. Violence, ah, that's what I want to see. Violence on the big screen and TV. It's in all my favorite sports and all the news reports. And I can't seem to get enough. Violence. How sick am I? Violence. Can't get enough. I can't get enough. enough violence.
P.F. Sloan on the World Cafe. Was I totally off base in that intro, or is your tongue somewhat in cheek in that song?
It is. It is. No, not off base. I really wonder how sick I am. I mean, to lay down on the couch with a piece of pizza and watch women getting raped and children killed, and that's my nightly entertainment. A way to de-stress. Watching make-believe people get killed, no relationship to them, they're just actors. Can I really make that mental distinction? Am I that capable of doing that? Psychologists will tell us, yes, it's a stress thing. Relieves stress, relieves the... I think it's just insane. I think that eventually this is all going to be like on one channel out of 5,000. You know, and it'll be like, here, dear, this is what we used to watch when we were, oh, my God, look at all those people. You know, I just think it's insane. I don't care what the theologians and psychologists say. They can't agree, but I think it's insane.
Coming up, more, including P.F. Sloan's reminiscence about Mama's and Papa's recording sessions when we get back to the World Cafe. David Dye, our World Cafe guest today, is singer-songwriter P.F. Sloan, a major, if largely unheralded, figure in the L.A. rock scene of the 1960s. His new album is first in over 30 years. Sailover is on High Tone Records. The Cafe's Michaela Majune continues our interview by asking him about playing guitar on his 60s label mates, the Mamas and Papas recording sessions.
Yeah, lead guitar. I did all the famous lines on California Dreamin' and... Monday, and Straight Shooter, pretty much all their hits for the first 2-3 years. You know, that Straight Shooter. And California Dreamin' was...
Was you playing that?
Mm-hmm.
One of the most famous riffs in history. How come I never knew that was you playing that?
Well, they didn't want it to get out because I could ask for $15 a week.
How much were they making?
God knows, but...
God only knows. That's incredible. So that was back at Dunhill Records. You were associated with Dunhill for a while.
Yes, for about... I was there when they started. I was the only writer, producer, singer that they had, an A&R person. And I was there from 64 to 66. And when they had, in no uncertain terms, put a gun to my head and said, your money or your life.
Why? What? Talk about that more. I don't understand what that means. They made you sign away your royalties to these hit songs?
Yes, yeah, for about 40 years. In 2002, that turned around.
But how could they make you do that?
Well, they threatened my life and my family's life.
Literally? They threatened your life?
Yes.
Who are these gangsters?
Yes, Chicago style.
They were the backers of the record company?
Yes.
Are you going to write a movie about your life?
I don't know. Who would play it? Who would believe it?
It's pretty incredible. So they threatened you and your family, meaning
yes.
your family of origin.
My mother and my father and my sister, yeah.
So you said, okay, I'll sign, and then you disappeared.
Right.
For a long time.
Yes.
Occasioning at some point Jimmy Webb to write this song about where is P.F. Sloan. How did you feel when you heard that song?
Like I was in a movie, literally. What was even stranger was that Jimmy then came out in an article saying, when they asked him who P.F. Sloan was, and he simply said, I just used that name as the great American songwriter, but there is no P.F. Sloan. I just made up the name. And they go, oh, what a great name. And so then it became even one step further that there was no P.F. Sloan. This was a made-up name. But listen to how this worked out. Eugene Landy, Brian Wilson's psychologist, right? Who was bleeding Brian Wilson dry for years and years, right? Well, finally, a reporter asked him, what gives you the right to write songs with Brian Wilson? And he said, obviously, you don't know my nom de plume. You don't know my stage name. And he goes, what's your stage name? He goes, P.F. Sloan. I wrote Eve of Destruction and Let Me Be and Secret Agent. And they go, oh, you're the writer of that. And he goes, yes, I exist. I'm P.F. Sloan. And I mean, the fool literally believed what Jimmy Webb had said, that there was no P.F. Sloan, and he took the name, and then he was disbarred the next week, and Brian got his life back.
Why did Jimmy Webb say that? Do you know? Do you know him?
Yeah, I helped Jimmy get started. I can't tell you. I don't know.
I guess you're not friends anymore.
No, I love him dearly. I do. I love him dearly. You know, everybody goes through something incredibly strange. I don't know. I don't know. He never really answered the question for me. He just said to me, you remember when you didn't show up at my house that night? I asked you to come up and you didn't. And he said, I wrote that song about you because you didn't show up at my house. And but I am grateful for that. That kept things alive for me, at least for 20, 30 years.
Now, why did you change your name from...
From Philip Gary Schlein?
Yeah. Why did you change your name from Philip Schlein to P.F. Sloan?
Well, my father encountered anti-Semitism when he moved to California, Los Angeles. He applied under two names to get a rental for a sundries business, one under Harry Schlein and the other under Harry Sloan. The same everything, but they rejected Harry Schlein. And he decided at that point that there was anti-Semitism, and he legally changed his name to Sloan at that point when I was about 12.
And where does the F come from in your name?
The F, for me, comes from faith at this point. As I said, originally I was diagnosed with St. Vitus dance when I was very young.
Which was what?
About 6-7 years old.
No, I mean, what is St. Vitus dance?
Oh, St. Vitus dance is sort of what they thought Elvis Presley had. You know, it's like massive shaking. And I was diagnosed with that as very young. And basically, I used to trip over everything. You know, my sister would say if there was one stone in the desert, he'd find it and trip over it. So she called me Flip. but now I go by Philip Faith Sloan.
Philip Faye Sloan is our guest today on the World Cafe. Now, one thing that I wanted to ask you before, when you were talking about all of this stuff going on with Brian Wilson, psychologist, and Jimmy Webb, you were there on the scene. You were witnessing all of this. How did that make you feel at the time? I know you were wrestling with some personal demons, but were you too afraid to go back to the music business all this time, or just you got sidetracked by other things? I mean, they forced you out of your legitimate royalties and all that. So that's one reason to disappear. But did you have to stay disappeared all this time?
Well, every time I tried to reemerge, every time I thought the coast was clear, there'd be new threats. So I just had to just really stay out of it completely. And then in 72... I was diagnosed with hypoglycemia, and I just literally physically and mentally just broke down for the next 20 years.
Hypoglycemia means you don't have you have too much blood sugar? No.
Yeah, too much blood sugar. It wipes out your memory and your cognitive mind. It's the opposite of diabetes, but it literally leaves you energyless and you have no mind. You can think, but you can't remember what you thought. You can't use that for the next moment.
It sounds a little bit like Alzheimer's.
It is. It's a dementia, and it leads into catatonia, in which I spent an amazing amount of time. And
that is what, like complete withdrawal into yourself?
A complete withdrawal into oneself, because one can't remember. I could see you, hear you, feel you, and know what you're saying. And then in the next moment, I would analyze it, digest it, and realize it as to how you are and feel good about that. And the next second, there's no memory of it whatsoever. It wasn't until I found a spiritual guru in India who just literally just started to bring me out of it, all of it.
How?
He's got very extraordinary healing powers. I mean, John Lennon went to go see him, and George was a devotee of his. And he came to me in a dream and said, come to India, I know how you're suffering, I'll heal you.
This is Maharishi?
No.
No.
This is Sai Baba. And I did. I went to India by myself, and he began the healing process. And he told me in 1998 he wanted me back in music. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. And he said, no, you're going back into music. That's where you are. That's where you belong. And I've been doing a lot of inner work, you know, inner religious physical study. And
P.F. Sloan is our guest today on the World Cafe. You mentioned that you were depressed, catatonic, and hypoglycemic.
Yeah.
And during that period, were you also bitter about what had happened?
I think the bitterness more than likely triggered off a whole series of physical and mental ailments. I think it's like an acid that just drains away your life force. So you really only truly hurt yourself when you're hating someone else. It's just, you know, you either want to be right or you want to be happy. And it's a health question. It's simply a health question. It's not a moral question. It's not a, you know, it's got all aspects of it. But I truly do think that the anger and the bitterness triggered off the diseases there, yeah.
So do you have a different perspective on what happened to you at this point, from this vantage point?
I believe so. I believe that whether you like it or not, you need to forgive. You need to forgive yourself for being naive or for overly trusting or overambitious. Or we all have a lot to learn. There's no manual in that. And no church has no religion has the exclusive on the truth of it. You have faith in yourself and in love and in God and light, and love all the same and treat all the same. You'll be treated well. And you need to learn to forgive. Even today, people say, I can't possibly forgive them for what they did. And basically what you're saying is, I'm going to give myself an ulcer, I'm going to give myself cancer, I'm going to give myself a disease because I cannot forgive them. And there's no problem in forgiving. There's a very famous Krishna defense. The defense is, this man kills this person, and he says to the judge, he says, Your Honor, he said, Krishna says that no one ever dies and that no one can do anything without God's will doing it. And he says, therefore, I plead innocent, because I could not have done what I did unless God willed it. And since nobody ever dies, I couldn't have killed this man. And the judge sentenced him after deliberate thought and said to him, you know, you're absolutely right. Nobody ever dies. We all do live forever. And nothing can happen without God's will. So when I put the noose around your neck, just realize that it's not my will that's doing this, and you're not going to die. So, I mean, if you forgive someone, the action is not, the action has to be paid for, but the forgiveness is a healing thing for us all.
P.F. Sloan is our guest today on the World Cafe. There's no way you'd sing Secret Agent, man.
Absolutely. You'd read my mind.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. Everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. And with every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are you won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number, but they're taking away your name. Beware of pretty faces that you find. A pretty face can hide an evil mind. And if you let the wrong word slip while kissing persuasive lips, the odds are you won't live to see next Friday. Secret agent man, secret agent man. How they've given you a number, but they're taking away your name. So you're swinging on the Riviera one day, then you're bleeding in a Bombay alley next day. Because you give yourself away by the loving words you say. Odds are you won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. Oh, they've given you a number, but they're taking away.
Great song, and another one of the great riffs of all time. Presumably that was inspired by James Bond and not Maxwell Smart.
Are you familiar with the English TV show Danger Man?
No.
Number one TV show in Britain. They had a worldwide contest for anyone who wanted to write the theme song to the American, had bought the series. They're going to bring it to CBS. And I submitted the original riff and 15 seconds of that song, and they bought it. So I started writing a song called Danger Man, and then they changed it to Secret Agent Man, and that's when the song really came together. I mean, it was, the lyric was so tight, so great, felt good.
Incredible song. And did this show ever get on?
It did. It was number one in the year 66. Late 65, early 66. It was number one TV show on CBS.
And it was called Danger Man?
It's called Secret Agent Man.
Oh, Secret Agent Man. Very good. Well, this has been really a treat, and welcome back. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you.
As somebody once said, what a long, strange trip it's been. And here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
So good luck with the record, and don't go away again.
I'll do my best. As I said, I've been on a comeback since 13 and a half, so I'm used to going in and out.
Our thanks to P.F. Sloan and Michaela Majoun. His new album is called Sail Over on High Tone Records, and it's available at our World Cafe CD store at our website at worldcafe.npr.org.